Welcome to a new episode of our S4N Changemakers podcast. For this episode, I'm very happy to welcome Frederik Merz, the founder and CEO of Ampere Cloud. You can expect questions about digitalization, the energy transition, the importance of cyber and IoT security, as well as data in operation of energy storage systems. So lots to ask Frederik about. Frederik, it's a pleasure to have you as my interview guest.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Thea, and welcoming me on your podcast. Really excited to talk about these topics since not only the energy industry is changing a lot, what all of us know, you know, the energy transition, and that brings a lot of repercussions and changing the way that we work in energy and big driver for digitalization, actually. So happy to talk about this.
Pleasure. Frederik, you are the founder and CEO of Ampere Cloud, a company driving digital innovation with the aim of developing the operating system for renewable energies. With a background in engineering and web and hardware development, as well as a passion for sustainability, you have founded Ampere Cloud to help energy asset operators manage and optimize their assets through smart data solutions. So, first of all, I'd like to know what led you to enter the energy sector?
That's a really good question. And yeah, usually a lot of founders come up with this like sophisticated story where they analyze the markets and they figured this is has the biggest pain or the biggest need. In our case, it was a little bit more mundane. Basically, my co-founder Eric and me, we had an IT project business, as well as also we were selling electronics projects in the time. And one of our first customers in 2013 already was a Berlin-based renewable asset operator. Yeah, and back in the time, they contacted us with a few challenges that we should have them fix. And it was a time where renewable energy was facing a tough period in Germany. So they were one of the few survivors of that time, so to say. And we helped them with our expertise in digitalization to fix these challenges. And the project grew bigger and bigger. And then in 2018, 2019, especially solar was picking up again in pace drastically, and we saw things as Fridays for Future and so on. And back in the time, the market was still having the same issues that we were tackling initially, like lack of digitalization, fragmented systems, really unstable, outdated systems. And so that brought us basically the opportunity to say, okay, let's take this knowledge from this in-house developments and bring this to the market and to serve this demand that was growing at the time.
You mentioned one co-founder. I think you are three founders, right, of Ampere Cloud. And when and how exactly developed you then the idea to start the company? So you mentioned some challenges.
We sat together in 2018, Eric and me, like our CTO and me. And back in the time, Eric had a focus on software development and I had a focus on electronics engineering. And we figured it would be best to bring in a commercial co-founder as well. And that's what brought us Florian. Florian was also involved with the people of the solar business that we were helping at the time. So it kind of came across naturally that us three co-founded then Ampere Cloud in 2019.
That was like the whole idea of starting a digital booster for the energy transition, so to say, with Ampere Cloud. We will get back to that, but I think one interesting focus topic is, before we dive into that, is what what change-making role in general does digitalization already play in the energy transition?
Yeah, this is a really good, really good question. So with the energy transition, there came mainly two changes. So first of all, when energy transition started, it was mostly fueled by subsidies. Like the government said, okay, we should move to solar, we should move to wind. And the government was paying a lot, like up to 1 euro per kilowatt hour produced in order to make this happen. And what allowed this was like very small businesses and niche businesses like tackling this on a very, let's say, entrepreneurial or hands-on level. However, this was not yet, let's say, super operationally sophisticated. And on the other hand, we have the traditional players of the energy industry who are used to run big coal power plants or big nuclear power plants. They have sophisticated workflows, but they are optimized for handling a single asset, and they are not really optimized for handling a large decentralized fleet of these assets. And the only way to handle these operations, like a really decentralized but nowadays commercially viable fleet, yeah, nowadays you don't have these large subsidies anymore, is via digitalization.
Interesting. And are there any like examples besides your company, transformative technologies that are perhaps not yet widely discussed, but could help in fixing the challenge of managing decentralized entities?
You mean in decentralization or digitalization as a concept in general, or with focus for the energy industry?
Or just in general, do you have an idea about a transformative technology that already exists and helping the energy transition, besides, of course, your company, that may not be widely discussed or already discussed, but do have an impact at the moment already?
Yeah, I think besides the asset management perspective that we are tackling, I think we are talking similar trends of operations digitalization that other industries have seen so far, like the use of customer relationship management systems, the use of enterprise resources management tools. Like a lot of big industries in the past used to have like a first wave of digitalization where they build their in-house tools and build like really complex monoliths. And a lot of those in the, let's say, in the 2000s and 2010s had then been replaced by software as a service tools. And the energy industry, as being a more conservative industry, yet has to perform this trend. So like similar what ERP systems or CRM systems did to other industries and also do in the energy industries, the core of the asset management, this is the part that we are tackling. But of course, there are still other trends too. For example, drones are a big topic in our industry, like surveying the installation grounds, like surveying roofs, surveying the landscape, but also surveying existing installations where you can have like a view on, okay, is there something broken, or identify the part of the facility that is broken.
Interesting. And now you mentioned, of course, your company, Ampere Cloud. What does it bring to the table to digitalization? How does your company integrate with the existing or not yet existing renewable infrastructure?
Yeah, the our approach is that we offer a full vertical and horizontal integration of all energy producing and energy storing assets. So what does that mean, vertical and horizontal? So first of all, vertical is the more classic term. It means you integrate all of the operational workflows, like the maintenance planning, the surveillance, the analysis of faults, the reporting, soon also the commercial asset management, where you take a look into commercial revenue streams and costs. You integrate all of these into one system, so you don't have any breaks in the knowledge, because usually you have knowledge silos. You have one department who has tool number A, and one department uses Excel, and another department uses tool number B, and then you have all these like communication gaps between the departments that go away once you integrate all of this into a vertical SaaS solution. And it's the vertical part, and the horizontal part means that you integrate the entire portfolio. So power plants from different manufacturers, because that used to be complex in the past as well, because they have different protocols and so on, but not just different manufacturers, but also different energy forms. So the integration of photovoltaic systems, wind power plants, as well as energy storage systems. And once you combine all of these, you get also similar synergies like the ones that you get from the vertical integration.
Interesting and useful to finally let the decentralized energies communicate and to be managed centrally. So that particularly sounds like a useful idea and technology on digital service for renewable companies. But if you think further, obviously that's a useful topic. But what are there any other, like, let's say, overhyped or underhyped digital developments in the energy sector? For instance, everybody's talking about artificial intelligence. It's really hard to integrate directly in the energy transition. As you mentioned in the beginning, it's a very conservative sector, industry. But what changes can we expect, or what topics should we, underestimated, underhyped?
Yeah, I think a really good example that you have brought is AI, because it is at the same time overhyped and underhyped. Maybe it is underhyped because we cannot yet already, let's say, know what the next years will bring and how much like productivity enhancement it will bring. And I'm really excited about this, and I think it will often surprise us, because what I have been seeing also in the founding landscape, let's say, is that the world around AI changes rather quickly. So something that has been launched 6 months ago as a product might be nowadays already obsolete, because some agent model of a typical large AI provider already covers it, and then it alleviates the need for the product. So defensibility in terms of like building a sustainable business is definitely an issue in AI, but you see there is a lot of really exciting, like, for example our developers can nowadays rebuild parts of our product or launch new features much quicker than before. You have a for every senior developer that you have basically a small army of virtual junior developers that can help like prototyping, and also vice versa. For every junior developer nowadays, they get really insightful like code reviews and quality assurance that's just basically a few clicks away. But with regards to the energy industry, I think it's also a little bit overhyped, because the energy industry at the end is a really conservative industry, and it's not just because it is conservative because the people are conservative, but it needs to be conservative as well. Like the power plants that have been built are super highly valuable assets. Like they have been built for billions of euros, and they operate on really tight margins, and they are part of our critical infrastructure that provides us with energy, with electricity every day. And that means that everything that we do in maintenance and the operations of these power plants must be really traceable, must be understood by human beings so that they can be held accountable for the maintenance, so that they can plan and understand the steps they are doing. Yeah, at the end, it's also a lot of construction work, and construction work has been shown the tendency to be really hard to automate so far. I mean, there are changes coming in the future there as well. But until now, it really relies a lot of the human beings, and these human beings need to understand what is going on with their facilities. It doesn't help them if you tell them like a really general ChatGPT-like answer. Okay, you have 1,000 power plants and you have 500 errors and this and that. It doesn't get you anywhere. You need like to help them, to help the human beings understand better what's going on with the systems. And AI can help with that, but it can't really replace the human in the loop for now, and at least.
I think that's a super interesting aspect, especially you said, yeah, human beings need to understand what's going on, especially in regards to the critical infrastructure. And another, and just to quote you, what you just said is, we're just a few clicks away. I thought that is an interesting part in regards to human understanding. Because with your background, I think, in web development, how important do you think it is to incorporate user-friendly interfaces so that perhaps human beings can understand what's going on, more ask in a perhaps provocative manner? Is the technology already there, but nobody knows how to use it, not only in regards to AI, but perhaps,
Yeah, I think user interfaces and the development of those, or user experience design, is also a quite underrated topic, because you can build prototypes, you can code quickly. But from my perspective, it has been always important to understand the customer needs and the customer's value creation in order to think about how a piece of software can help. And sometimes that can also mean like disrupting the way that people are working, because sometimes people don't ask for the solution. There's always this quote, if we would have asked the people 100 years ago what they would have liked, they would have said, we like to have faster horse carriages. But they wouldn't have said, we need a car, or we need a train, or something like that. And it's similar with the energy industry. There used to be a lot of what we call active monitoring. So people, like really highly skilled engineers, were looking at charts and measurements of the facilities actively. So they were judging the voltages and power and current, and they were really experts in identifying if something is right or wrong. And what we tell the people is, nowadays you can have so-called smart alarm systems. So alarm systems that have algorithms, not like artificial intelligence or something, but really statical algorithms that check all these boundary conditions, and they flag if something is going wrong with the facility and explains to them what's wrong. So people that use our software, they might not look into as much of these charts anymore. They still can do that if they want, but we advise them not to start with the charts, but to start with the alarms, to say, we are losing 100 kilowatt hours in this facility because some device of a facility is faulty. And if you want, you can take a look at the charts to understand better what is faulty. But you start with the actual errors. It's not you that have to find the errors, but the errors find you, basically.
I I like that creative thought. It's actually a very important nudge for all of us. So, so the alarms give us the idea of what to handle when. But of course, then digitalization plays a major role in ensuring that the success. However, there's also the part that that is only possible if the security is, I don't want to say secured, but security is maintained, such as cyber and IoT security in place. For those who don't know what IoT is, it means Internet of Things and refers to such as smart home devices, among other things. I think, Frederik, you can explain it better than me. But to sum it up, what you as an expert, what role does this play in the energy transition? And could you please give us some example of major cyber threats or minor operating problems that have occurred due to a lack of security? Because I think that's a very important topic to you. Or perhaps you have security threats that the public is not yet aware of, something you can share with us, something exciting or not so exciting or scaring.
Yeah, for sure. I can share some maybe exciting, maybe also scaring insights to that also. I think, first of all, when you talk about security or IT security, for me, it's always to understand the difference. It's important to understand the difference between the IT security in terms of the security of the piece of code or the system itself intrinsically, and the operational security, that is meaning the people that operate these systems. Mm-hmm. I think nowadays we have an extremely high standard of IT security. That means if people that build the software or the hardware use the let's say state of the art technologies, libraries, and so on, it means usually in 99% you are secure. It's usually we teach these principles like security by default and so on. So we have done a long way here. With regards to the energy industry, there is one thing to take note is that a lot of systems that are deployed in the field are still old, and they come from a time where this kind of security by default was not a thing yet. So, for example, there are quite a few old power plants that where you can find the power plant controller. You can find these devices via Google or via specialized IoT search engines.
Oh, wow.
And what you can do is they have standard passwords and you can just turn them off. You can tell them, hey, please shut down. And
that sounds like a Hollywood movie, if I may interrupt. That's scary. Okay.
Yeah, that's already scary, but I think this could be alleviated quite easily because these devices are easy to spot. They can be replaced. And then new devices or new solutions that are sold by us, but also by our competitors, are basically safe in this regard. I think the more complex topic is the operational security around it. Because, and also the kind of like data sovereignty, because a lot of the pieces of infrastructure that we buy nowadays, for example, comes from, let's say, from Chinese providers or from US providers. And like you have seen all these controversies about like data sovereignty, hybrid warfare, and so on. And all of this is also applicable to the energy industry. And I think in a few years, like we are, I think, at 60% now, and in a few years, we will be at 80% renewable energy share. So the renewable energy will be the forefront of our critical infrastructure. And yeah, if you imagine, for example, a coal power plant or a nuclear power plant, you see usually you have fences, you have guards on the ground, they do like ID checks and so on. If you visit companies that are operating renewable energy assets, they are not usually built as operationally secured as these. And they also, their procurement strategies are not that strong and so on. All of this is changing also because of regulation. There is the NIS standard and the CRITIS standard in Germany for critical infrastructure certification. So a lot of this is happening, but the pressure on it is not really high yet because the regulating bodies do not force yet a lot of these regulation onto the operators.
So just for me, as I understand, the topic of operational security you mentioned is like us, the human error, basically. For example, when we train for, when I get all these phishing mails or training mails, like here somebody tries to convince me to transfer 1 million euros to, I don't know, somewhere. This is something I can, what you just described with the defenses and the ID checks and so on, what you reckon as an operational thing. Right. No, perfectly clear that. And other question, what should we do then, or should companies do, or politics perhaps even, to could we do to ensure more security? You mentioned the let's get new or more modern IT secured standardized devices and so on. But there are any other, or get more, you just mentioned the how to enhance the operational security in renewable asset sites. Is there perhaps just a further idea you have in mind?
I would say maybe the two main things that I would see is, first of all, the regulating bodies should put more pressure on the operators, because I think the operators, many of them are not aware yet, maybe not just pressure but also help, but they are not aware yet what the challenges are and what the best practices would be to avoid them. Because, I mean, you can imagine for the operational security of the offline world, you have these ideas of like fences and ID control and whatever, and guards. In the digital world, it's a little bit more complex. You need things like 4i principle, two-factor authorization, and so on. So I think there can be done a lot of that. And another part is, I would say, the part of the digital sovereignty. So the governments should talk more actively about, okay, who do we want to have in charge? Because I can give you an example. When there was a Chinese fund, or the Chinese government wanted to buy the largest grid operators in Germany. And when that happened, the government stepped in. They said, okay, that shouldn't happen. We will find an investor from Germany or from Europe. And that was done. But in the decentralized world, there's many infrastructure providers, or for example, providers of so-called power plant controllers, which is indirectly or directly owned by Chinese companies. And with these devices, the threat is much more, in my opinion, even much more critical than for typical infrastructure. Because when you have a single infrastructure failure in a centralized world, you can go there and fix it. If you have, in a decentralized world, a bad faith actor, for example, manipulating power plant controllers, they could manipulate thousands of these controllers, which run gigawatts of power, so 1 gigawatt is roughly 1 nuclear power plant, into a way that if you try to fix the grid, the device works against the grid. So if the voltage is too high, then it would increase the voltage even higher. If the voltage is too low, it would drop it even lower. And if some of these actors would do that, it would, after a blackout, it would not be possible to bring the grid online, because every time they would try it, the devices that regulate the stability of the grid would bring it to a crash once again. And this is something where we should ask ourselves, as a society, who do we want to have in charge for this? Is this something where like governance need to step in, where we need more regulation? And I think a lot of these topics are politically still avoided because they have really subtle or not so subtle repercussions, and they are not easy to fix.
Cybersecurity, digitalization, huge topics we already discussed, but there's still one I want to squeeze in. Perhaps we just talk about it briefly, but you mentioned several times in our interview the operating data. And I think, or I reckon, besides security, data is one of the key topics for the successful operation of renewable assets, but also obviously other power plants. Especially, I think, battery energy storage systems. In our experience at ASFERIN, some asset owners are also new to the business of operating such, not only batteries, but assets, energy assets in general. What do you think are the most common hurdles that those operators, especially battery operators, face when working with the data? Which data points should they monitor and why? So how should we manage data?
I think the battery operators have a similar issue nowadays that the solar operators had 10 or 20 years ago. And I think the issue is that there is still not a lot of experience with the operational lifetime of these assets. So, we know the typical KPIs such as like uptime or state of charge or whatever, but we don't know yet, okay, what might be the defects in 5 years? Like, which part of the systems will break down first? Where do we need to do maintenance? I mean, of course, there are some recommendations by the manufacturers and some best practices, but operations is always also about doing these things efficiently and focusing about things that matter. And I would say the two things that I would recommend is for the BESS operators, the battery storage operators, is that they first of all take a look from the, let's say, from a top-down perspective, from this kind of operational, from what are the most important KPIs, how can we track them, what are the most important workflows. That would be something that we offer with our operating system. And then additionally to that, as needed or just to be prepared, I would to take the, let's say, the bottom-up look as well. And those are things that we do together with our partners. We don't do it ourselves, but those are like battery analytics systems where you really dive deep into like cell voltages, cell chemistry, physical simulations of these assets. That's something you can do if you want to be really at the forefront and want to be really sure you understand what's going on with the systems. Because otherwise you have to rely on the, let's say, on the manufacturer's data. And that might be, for example, too optimistic. And I think it's good to check in with these data, especially at the very early stage of these systems, in order to see, are they really behaving the way that we expected?
Mm. Super interesting. So that was a very short or quick excursion to operating data. I would love to dive into more and what Ampere Cloud obviously also can offer in regards to that. But I think we already gained so many insights digitalization in general and cyber security in the energy transition. That I have to ask our last question, that we, that all my guests or our guests, get. And that is, who is your favorite change maker and who do you admire for his or her groundbreaking spirit?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question. So in terms of like, what is like, a role model for change? I might have a little bit like controversial answer for that. I had for myself, it has always been difficult to identify role models, because what, if you talk about these people, then usually that means, kind of the, this romantic approach that there is this one human being and they are so smart and they have all of these great ideas and the ability to execute and they make the society leap a step forward. And I think in the tech industry nowadays, especially, people are still really fond of this and they say, ah, okay, Sam Altman or Elon Musk or whatever. But I think this way of thinking comes at a risk because it overstates the power of these people, or also maybe sometimes gives those people more power than they should have, and it underestimates the collective power of human systems, of human societies, of smart young people and engineers that always come up with new ideas and are hungry to deploy them. And yeah, so the short answer is I don't really have like a favorite change maker in that.
That's perfectly fine, but I like the idea that you think that your favorite change maker can also be the collective mind and us changing, for instance, the energy transition for to the better. Perfect. Thank you so much. Thank you for being our guest and with these wonderful...
Thank you very much for hosting me.
Yeah, wonderful insights and about digitalization, security, data, although that was a short one. But I hope our audience also enjoyed this interview and and invite you to stay tuned for the next Energy Loaded podcast.